The Sean Green Show. Sean covers all things entertainment. Movies, books, news, concerts, television, video games, the entertainment guru. Sean covers it all. This is the Sean Green Show podcast. The Sean Green Show podcast on WGN Plus and SeanGreenShow.com.
Welcome to the Sean Green Show. I'm Sean Green. I want to thank everybody out there that's listening. Hey, make sure you check me out on SeanGreenShow.com. Yes, that is SeanGreenShow.com. All the latest news, interviews, and podcasts are up at SeanGreenShow.com. Check me out on Facebook. It's Sean Green Show Media. And Twitter is at Sean Green Show. Having a jam-packed show. We got finished talking to Eric Davis. We had actor Kenan Lonsdale from CW's The Flash. He's at C2E2 from the 19th all the way through the 20th. So make sure you check that out at C2E2. That's Kenan Lonsdale. You know him as Wally from The Flash. So make sure you check that out as well. Now we're moving on to video games, and more video games. And who else to talk to about video games than Ray Carcillo, the review editor at Electronic Gaming Monthly. That's Electronic Gaming Monthly, EGMNow.com. And on RayCarcillo.com, you can check him out. We welcome you, and we were supposed to talk to you a couple of days ago. We had so many like studio issues and all that stuff. First of all, I want to thank you on air for being so flexible with us, because you take time out of your day to talk to us, and we couldn't get our stuff together. So I just wanted to publicly apologize to you, man.
Oh, no, dude, it's all good. It's not a problem. I know stuff happens, and you know, you just gotta roll with the punches. And I'm glad we were able to finally get together again and talk about some more games.
All right, cool. So, all right, one of the things that I came across throughout the week, and this is an article on whatculture.com, was an article by Robert Zack. I'm going to give him credit for that. 10 things that are ruining video games. Now, I've been playing video games for 20-plus years, okay? So I'm an old guy. All right, so one of the things that I remember when playing a video game from back in the day, where there wasn't any booklets that really helped you out, unless it was like a big like blockbuster game where they kind of helped you out but didn't tell you everything. But now they have all these little knickknacks that show you how to get through video games. And one of the things that I wanted to talk to you, Ray, about, and one I think is totally understandable why this is ruining video games. One was the special vision modes. And I can attest to this with the Batman Arkham series, where they had the detective mode, or when Batman threw the smoke, he had like the X-ray vision where he can see through certain obstacles. Now, that's one of the things that actually, to me, I think is ruining video games. What say you?
Well, I definitely think that the supervision in too many games, I think, doesn't work. I think in Batman, at least they were able to work it in a narrative way that made sense. But I think you look at games that like Hitman, and you look at games like Tomb Raider, and it kind of, those games, I think it's definitely not necessary. It's especially those old things, Square Enix games. It just seems like developers kind of fell in love with somebody else's mechanic and kind of just tried to cram it in there in a way that really didn't make sense. Because, like, I mean, I get it, you know, Agent 47 is a super Hitman, you know, and everything, but, like, you don't need Hitman vision or whatever they call it to figure out how to, you know, kill people. And same thing with Tomb Raider. You shouldn't need that stuff to figure out how to explore the world. At least with Batman, you know, like, it makes sense because the character in the comics and the movies, he's got these, like, detectives, you know, he has special goggles and vision in his cowl and all this other stuff. So it's, at least that I can forgive. At least there it made sense in the narrative sense, but, like, I definitely think it's starting to creep into too many games just for the sake of being there instead of being incorporated in a way that makes sense and that should be there, you know?
Yeah. Another one that really gets my goat is the being able to pay for, like, extra boosts or extra, like, you can get, like, extra weapons. And I think this is, like, I know, like, in Call of Duty is one of them, like, where you can just buy you know, as long as you have the money, you can buy more powerful weapons. And so when you're actually playing online, you have a extra edge on somebody just because you spent the money on a more powerful weapon. I think those I don't mind a weapon being on a video game, but I think stuff like that should be earned. You shouldn't be able to just go into your credit card or go into your little wallet and just buy it, and then you're totally just dominant. So I think with that, I think that's totally annoying.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think any time that you can mess up the balance of a game by spending real-world cash on it, whether it's for DLC characters or maps or weapons, like you said, anything that probably is already on the disc, and then, you know, you're having to just buy the code to unlock it, it's especially frustrating. I definitely agree that it's a bad habit that some companies have gotten into. I think that the backlash and blowback from a lot of the community is starting to nerf that in some ways. A lot of companies, like you see with Street Fighter V, where Capcom has kind of promised that there will be a way to earn characters by grinding for them, and at least providing an alternative for people who don't want to spend the real-world cash. But the fact that you have that option there at all, there's so many people out there who are going to be lazy, who are going to be like, well, you know, I don't have the time to put into this game, but hey, I got $5 lying around. It defeats the purpose of playing the game in a way.
Yeah, and the last thing I wanted to talk about here about the 10 most annoying things that's annoying gamers is the early access to games, and I'm guessing they're talking about like the beta modes to some of these games, because you get like Street Fighter is one of them where you got pretty much the beta, and when the actual game came out, it wasn't too far off from the beta. So do you think beta access should be totally just over and done with?
Well, I think beta access can serve a purpose if companies actually utilize it the way it should be utilized. I mean, Street Fighter was a horrible disappointment because you had four betas leading up to its launch, and at the end of the day, they still didn't get it right. A beta is supposed to allow you to test things out, work out your bugs, and so that when the final game comes out, it's all fixed. In terms of early access, for games like on Steam, these games are especially frustrating for different reasons, because they're like half-completed games, and it's kind of like people asking for money or asking for support before the game is finished. Now, for indies, I can understand why they might need that, but it is definitely frustrating because you think you're getting one experience and then you have to wait for the rest of it. It almost becomes episodic in a way, because you're waiting for that early access label to be taken off and for the game to be considered, okay, we went from, version 0.5, 0.8, now it's 1.0. Right now it's the full game, it's done, and it feels kind of like the people who got early access, like, you know, they're kind of getting screwed because they're having to wait for all this time for the game. And then because the companies are taking this extra time to polish the game because they're waiting for more people to try it in early access, the people who are waiting for 1.0 get screwed because the game might be in early access for a couple of years, you know? A good game, for example, is like Kerbal Space Program, which is a great game, but it was in early access for forever until it finally was officially released. There's a game now called Ark Survival Evolved, which is deals with dinosaurs, and it's the same thing. It's where it's in early access right now, and people are trying it and testing it out, and basically kind of acting as QA in a way for these smaller developers who can't afford it. And it just seems like, in a way, that they're taking advantage of the audience.
Right, right. So, all right. So let's move on to video games, because people are texting me right now. I'm saying, hey, get to the games, get to the games. So we're going to get to the games, all right? All right, so Pokken Tournament. Now, first of all, why is it called Pokken Tournament and not Pokemon Tournament? Is there is there any particular reason for this?
So they're kind of trying to connotate a cross-reference between Pokemon and Tekken. Because this was co-developed with Bandai Namco, and Bandai Namco did a lot of the fighting mechanics for the game, it's kind of a cross between Pokemon and Tekken. So it's Pokemon characters, but it's got some Tekken gameplay to it, and Tekken elements when it comes to the actual fighting. So because of that, they're trying. The reason why it's called poking tournament is they're trying to connotate and make reference to both franchises.
Okay. Now, is there any as far as any like fighting styles? Are there different fighting styles in this game? And as far as characters, how many playable characters do you get right off the bat?
So the character roster, we'll start there, is very disappointing. Out of 720 possible Pokemon, 720 plus at this point, there's only 14 characters. As soon as you start the game up, you can unlock two more over the course of the story mode, which is a horrendous grind. So you get 16 total at the end of the day, but only 14 at launch. And when you consider that, there's so many Pokemon on the roster, there's so many Pokemon that they could have added to this that could have made sense in the game. Considering they did a Pokemon like Chandelure, which is a Chandelier Pokemon, they could have figured out a way to put other Pokemon into this game and make them work. So the character roster, although well-balanced and the characters are all handled very, very well, very disappointing to see only 14.
So that
was really, really kind of a shame. For that. And in terms of fighting styles, all the characters have their own kind of fighting style and kind of draw from Pokemon, right? So Weavile has Ice Punch, Machamp has Submission, Charizard has Seismic Toss. So they have moves that are geared from the Pokemon counterpart. But when it comes to fighting, actually, they do something kind of weird. It's called a phase shift. Each fight starts with in an arena mode, kind of like Naruto Shippuden, the Ultimate Ninja series, where it's a 3D fighter and you can run around in circles and everything. But then when you hit your opponent, it does a drastic shift into a 2D plane, like Tekken, where it goes back into a war Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat, a more traditional fighting game. And when that happens, your moves change, and it's really a difficult transition. So even though it's well balanced and the characters handle well, it's almost like you're learning two characters per character, depending on what shift or phase you're in during the match. So that was definitely an interesting and different way of doing it. But I'm not really sure I like it because it gets confusing after a while.
All right, now back to the amount of characters that you get. So in the age of DLCs and all this other stuff, I'm guessing they're going to do like a money grab and just add on different characters since they have like 700 plus characters. Do you feel that, you know, they're going to end up doing this with DLCs that you can buy? And do you feel like this is like a total money grab in one of those instances where we talked about in past shows where these companies say, okay, we're only going to add a few because we know this has a big following. We know these people are going to pay for extra characters.
You know, I think this wasn't as much. I think they will add DLC at some point because I think you're going to see how popular this game gets. I think this, though, in a way, it wasn't necessarily their plan from the start because I think this was more of an experiment that they could to see if they could actually, if Pokemon and Tekken and this fighting combat style and this style of game could work. Because if you look at the game, the fighting is very tight and the core is very solid. There's not a lot of bells and whistles, not a lot of modes that you typically see in a lot of other modern fighters. It's a very straightforward, very simplistic fighter in many ways. So I have the feeling that this was kind of an experiment by Nintendo and by the Pokemon Company and by Bandai Namco in terms of seeing if they could get this to work, if Pokemon could work as a fighting game. And in terms of just the fighting, it does work very well once you get used to it. But obviously with the popularity and with such a small roster of characters in this game and such a large amount of Pokemon to draw from, that if this game starts to do well, I think that it would be naive to think they would not add at least a handful of DLC characters down the line and then probably make a sequel with even more characters later on.
All right, we're talking with Ray Carcillo, review editor at Electronic Gaming Monthly, EGMNow.com, RayCarcillo.com. Let's move on to Tom Clancy's The Division. First of all, what's the play style like? Because when we talk about military games, shoot 'em games, they're pretty much, in my opinion, they're pretty much all the same. What sets this out? What sets this away from the other shooters that are out there right now?
Well, the thing about the Division, aka the Death Sea Killer, because that's what it's trying to be, is that it's a shooter on the surface, but it's also really very much an action RPG. So even though you're using guns and that you're using weapons, it kind of has almost like a border in a way, kind of like a way that Borderlands does, is that you're using guns, but a lot of these enemies have HP bars. They take multiple hits, even multiple headshots, even. Because it's trying to provide more of a, or even in Destiny, of an RPG feel than a shooter feel, I think. I think that guns and the setting are really just, the icing on the cake, but the actual gameplay boils down to that more of an RPG or an action RPG with guns. So even though, yeah, you're shooting and whatnot, and that's your primary form of attacking people, although you can melee and you have gadgets and grenades and stuff that you would expect from a shooter, it plays more like an action RPG. I mean, and yeah, there's a cover system as well. You have to use cover, you have to use stealth, very much in a Tom Clancy kind of vibe. But in terms of how you level, in terms of your perks, in terms of PvP in the Dark Zone, The Division is a shooter on the surface, but an action RPG at its heart.
All right, great. Let's move on to Star Fox Zero and Star Fox Guard. Now, Star Fox, I will say, was one of my favorite games back in the day. And so when was the last Star Fox released, and what's the storyline behind Star Fox Zero? What's the new storylines behind these?
So Star Fox Zero is taking, it's been a long time since you've seen a proper Star Fox game. So Star Fox Zero is kind of getting back to the series' roots. You know, it's following Fox McCloud on more adventures. You know, Star Wolf and all of his crew is back. We're assuming we're going to see Andross at some point, maybe, but we haven't heard. And it's basically Star Fox and his crew moving through the galaxy, planet by planet, stopping this evil invasion force from, destroying the Lylat system. And so it's very much a true-to-form, very original-style Star Fox game where you're going to have to use the Landmaster tank and a couple of new vehicles, but you're going to primarily be in your R-Wing, flying around in this on-rails flight sim, blowing stuff up. So, I mean, it's very much in terms of, it is a true-to-form, classic-style Star Fox game. So if you love the old-school Star Foxes from the N64, the Super Nintendo, this is kind of a throwback to those in a lot of ways, with modern graphics and with modern processing power. So definitely, if you're a fan of Star Fox, I would be very excited with Star Fox.
Yeah. So as far as amiibos, is there a special amiibo for this title? And if so, what would it be?
So there's a couple of special modes in the game one is going to make it so that you get an advanced R-Wing that does more damage, but that you also take more damage in trying to up the difficulty. The other is for the more casual player, where there's an invincibility mode where you basically are just flying through the game, you don't have to worry about dying. There's also going to supposedly be co-op, two-player co-op, where it's a friend who can help you out. In the game, I'm not sure if it's going to be in a second R-Wing, or maybe Nintendo will try something crazy where one person will fly the plane, the other person will shoot. I really hope they don't do that. But that is something that I wouldn't put it past Nintendo, but they are doing a co-op mode as well. So there are some special modes that if you want to get past the just the single-player experience that Star Fox typically provides.
All right, great. And lastly, The Legend of Zelda, Twilight Princess HD. Let's see, is there any need for features available in this game, such as additional dungeons, quests, and weapons?
So, unfortunately, Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess is a very true-to-form port of the original Twilight Princess, which was a great game, don't get me wrong. I love Zelda Twilight Princess. It's actually one of my favorites. I think it's one of the more underrated Legend of Zeldas. In the series. And I think that it's a little disappointing that there really isn't a lot of new stuff here in this. The one thing they add is that if you have the Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess Wolf Link amiibo, there's a challenge cave that unlocks, but it is not part of the main adventure. It is not necessary. It does not expand the main quest. And you do get one extra item to beat that. You get the giant rupees bag, which basically allows you to hold up to 10,000 rupees. But that is the only real addition to Twilight Princess in terms of gameplay, in terms of extending the length. Otherwise, this is very much an upscale in terms of graphics. They obviously make the game look a lot prettier. They didn't do it from the ground up, unfortunately. So there are times where you kind of, the newer graphics actually make the game look worse because a lot of the textures did not stand the test of time. Did not stand the test of the Temple of Time, you can say, for all the Legend of Zelda fans out there. But, you know, so I would say that. But, I mean, if you're a fan, if you never played Twilight Princess, I would say this is a great time to get on board because it is one of the better Zelda games that was ever made. It's got some real poignant and powerful moments, some of the best ones in the series. And but if you are an old school fan, you played it 10 years ago when it came out for the last game of the GameCube, first game of the Wii, you might be disappointed because there's not a lot of new stuff there.
All right, and there you have it. Ray Carcillo, review editor at Electronic Gaming Monthly, EGMNow.com. Make sure you check out RayCarcillo.com as well. If you want to follow him on Twitter, you most certainly can. It's at Ray Carcillo. You got a Pokken tournament, Tom Clancy's The Division, Star Fox Zero, Star Fox Guard, and Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess HD. Make sure you guys check all that stuff out. Ray, thanks so much for joining us, and always thanks for being a part of the Sean Green Show.
Thanks for having me, Sean. I appreciate it.
All right, and we'll be back right after this.
Thanks for listening to The Sean Green Show, the entertainment guru. You could friend him on Facebook, Sean Green Show Media, or follow him on Twitter, at Sean Green Show. The Sean Green Show on WGN Plus and SeanGreenShow.com.